talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning and happy Penguin Awareness Day. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Ellen Jaffe Jones, the running coach, speaker, and author of such books as the best-selling Eat Vegan on $4 a Day and Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households. Jones' own house was a kitchen divided. She's a vegan, her husband a carnivore. Chiefly owing to the widening gulf involving those issues and heightened tension over Jones' evolution from being vegan, mainly for health reasons to more and more for animal rights reasons, the marriage ended. Jones, who will deliver two talks this Saturday at Creative Loafing's new event, Veg Out, has joined me in studio this morning to discuss these matters, including the perils of the vegan forging a marriage or other significant relationship with a meat eater, a cautionary tale that may have broader implications for other relationships with such fundamental philosophical differences. We'll get to that conversation with Ellen Jaffe Jones in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also later in the program, I'll speak briefly with Twyla Cole, Director of Development at the Humane Society of Pinellas, about their Pet Festival 2016, taking place January 30th in St. Petersburg. Lastly, we're about 2 weeks away from WMS Winter Fund Drive, and I really hope I can ask you to give me a running start today towards my fundraising goal by making an early, early contribution. In fact, why not now? As usual, we have a slew of exclusive gifts to thank you for your donation and support of Talking Animals, including amazing tickets to see Willie Nelson at Ruth Eckert Hall, the great deal on the week's stay at the condo in Kauai, books by Dr. Carl Safina and Tracy Stewart, yes, wife of John Stewart, signed by both authors, and more. Please visit TalkingAnimals.net for details on these and other gifts and fast, easy ways to pledge early. Thank you right now, though. Let's move into our conversation with Ellen, with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Ellen Jaffe Jones back to Talk Animals. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you've been on a couple of times previously, and in your first appearance, we spoke at some length about how a medical scare and the history of disease in your family prompted you to drastically change your diet some 30 years ago. Of course, not everyone listening this morning may have heard that conversation, and either way, that history will likely connect to today's conversation. So I'd like to start by asking you to review that history and some of the details about when and how you made more significant changes to your diet.
Well, it started when I was 28 years old. I was leading the active life of an investigative TV reporter, and I almost died of a colon blockage. And doctors said they'd never seen a blockage that large in somebody so young, and I'd need to be on meds the rest of my life. So ran to the health food store, read all 4 books on fiber, because that's all there was, and changed my diet at that point. Eventually, the way I morphed into it was through a macrobiotic diet, then vegetarian, then vegan. And I had fits and starts along the way just because all the information that we now know wasn't there at the time. I was involved as a La Leche League leader, breastfeeding information and support group, which actually advocated, after you weaned your baby of your own species-specific milk, going into meat and dairy. That was necessary for the kid's development, or so they said. We now know differently. Then I became a financial consultant, couldn't control my diet because we were force-fed a lot of working lunches and client dinners and gained a lot of weight, and then found myself in the ER a second time, almost having to have a hysterectomy, and a very astute doctor said, go back to that vegan diet and call me in the morning, and within several weeks, all signs of menopause were gone.
Wow, dramatic. So, especially then in phase 2, maybe more than of the vegan diet, because this too also may tie into the core of today's conversation. Tell me how the other members of your family responded to your shift.
Well, in my immediate family, since I was the youngest of 3 daughters, they all just didn't jump on board whatsoever. You know, cult member, black sheep, those were labels I heard. I tried bringing the most colorful salad I could to family events and then eventually got uninvited to family events.
Not another salad, right?
No.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah. Although my parents were very, very supportive, and actually my father made some significant changes at the end of his life, giving up dairy, and was amazed that his chronic lifelong sinus condition evaporated. Imagine that, after going through nasal surgery.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, there were some family members, and some cousins have also gone vegan as a result. So that's been very cool. However, when I re-met my husband, we were actually, I was not vegan at the time. I was at Smith Barney, and so it wasn't on my radar as importantly as it is now.
And as I recall, you have one or maybe two daughters also?
I have three daughters.
Three, okay. Right. I knew it was at least two, and I can remember for sure it was three. So I guess just more generally, just everyone in your more immediate family, how did that play? What was their response to your... especially when you really knuckled down and got serious about going vegan?
Well, by that time, I was actually divorced from the father of my children, and it became, as food often is, a battleground at the time as well. So the first thing he did when I moved out was he mowed down the organic garden. So, you know, when you have those kinds of issues, it really does. The kids take that on and they are sadly caught in the middle. I will say my kids are now beyond college and adults now. And I had a kind of rough day about a couple of weeks ago. And they sent me, just yesterday it arrived, a gift basket of vegan goodies from Pangea. You know, they are hearing the message. And that
they really know what it is all about.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Stress. If you just tuned in, my guest is Ellen Jaffe Jones, author of three vegan cookbooks. Books, including Kitchen Divided, Vegan Dishes for Semi-Vegan Households. We're discussing how her own Kitchen Divided, among other issues, led to a marriage dissolved. Ellen, by the way, will be speaking in Tampa this Saturday at Creative Loafing's new event, Veg Out. Meanwhile, if you'd like to ask her a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So that husband was gone and mowed down the garden for good measure on the way out. But now the subsequent husband, and within the family, how often were there sort of moments of tension around your becoming vegan when other people were, in the wake of the Smith Barney years or otherwise, just not inclined to be open to that themselves?
When I was at Smith Barney, the ratio of men to women was 10 to 1. And there was actually a class action lawsuit that was filed in another part of the country that I ended up being a part of. And women really had to pick their battles carefully. So I just brought in my little McDougal cups and hid them under the drawers where I worked. And I tried my best, but it obviously didn't go so well. Within my family, as I started down this trajectory, and this really was a return to what I had been doing earlier in my life. I mean, I was a TV reporter before I had kids. I was vegan, and I made sure I could include any kind of animal rights or animal friendly story I could when I was a reporter. I covered some of the worst animal abuse stories in the country at the time, puppy mills. And I won't go into all those details, but sure. My heart was there. I just was at the point I entered veganism. I was doing it for health reasons because of my family history. Mom and both sisters had breast cancer and everything else, and heart disease and diabetes. And I was just looking at this and listening to doctors who said, you better do something differently with your life or you're going to end up like everybody else.
And so particularly it was that doctor who said, go back to what you were doing if we want to stave off any really ugly medical episodes that you're just on the cusp of, I guess.
Right. And I really plunged myself into reading. You know, by this time, the internet was alive and thriving, and my eyes are popping out of my head with all the research that is pointing in the direction of a vegan diet is the best thing you can do for your health, the environment, and of course, animals. So when I started doing media consulting, the first person I called up was Dr. Neil Barnard, who is the president of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. I said, Neil, do you need any help media training? And he said, absolutely. So I went on board with them and then smelled my way into their kitchen where they were developing a cooking program for the Cancer Project and said, I got to do this. So I became a trained instructor, went came back to the Tampa area where I live and started doing cooking classes. And through that osmosis, obviously, I was trying to bring in my husband and anybody else who would listen to really the science and the research that is so clearly out there now. I mean, it really, as we know, a vegan diet can reverse and prevent heart disease. That's the big thing.
So as you plunged further into with PMRC, with other things, was there a kind of understanding and a patience within the household, and especially with your husband, or was there slowly growing tension just because that was not the way that he was inclined to proceed himself, and you were plunging further into it?
I think that's a good description of what typically happens in these kinds of situations. I often say we are not born into vegan families. I only know one case of two kids who were born into vegan families about 20 plus years ago. So we all have these epiphanies and moments where we get it. And I understand that not everybody gets it or comes on board. So I wrote my book, Kitchen Divided, as kind of a testimonial and a way of dealing with the issues that divided kitchens have. And this is a huge issue for so many people. That's why I wrote it. And I tried to help people.
Let's take a moment and just briefly sort of maybe describe Kitchen Divided and what the title sort of hints at it. But I mean, more specifically, what it was seeking to do and the kind of recipes it provided with that philosophy in mind.
Yeah, the main thing was I wanted my readers to not feel like I did, a short order chef, having to make different meals, different recipes at every single meal. So I wanted to have recipes that were like my main dish and then the meat eater's side dish. Or maybe it would be a main dish for both folks in the relationship or all the people in the family, and they could dump in whatever meat or fish or any kind of animal product they wanted to, but the vegan would not necessarily have to deal with it up close and personal. And the book also structures ways that you can talk about this with your partner and identifying the values that are most important. And when I look back on, as I like to call it, Kitchen Divided fail, that's what I didn't do really as we were going along. I did not say, and I take ownership and responsibility for that, that I didn't say, you know, it's really important that I not look at animal flesh while I'm eating. It's really important that we not go to a steakhouse and I am stuck ordering a sweet potato because that's the only thing I can eat there. And I did try and be more assertive and say, hey, how about let's go to a vegan restaurant or a Thai restaurant or someplace like that? And when the answer kept coming back, no, I fault myself for not being stronger and saying, look, this is important to me. And if you can't deal with it, then, you know, we should have been over sooner.
So you did attempt some negotiation, if not compromise, for the kind of restaurants you would go to, for example. But that didn't work. And so what you're saying now is, in retrospect, you either should have pushed harder or should have responded differently when those efforts weren't successful.
Absolutely. And I was trying to do the whole death to us part kind of thing, especially
hopefully not sooner rather than later.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, as at the time, and this was all over Facebook because we were married at the time, but about a year or so ago, he did have a near-death heart attack. And so at the time we were married, it was quite okay to post all of that. And he actually did make an attempt to go vegan for a short period of time. But what often happens in these cases is that food is a very powerful addiction. And unless you do a whole lot of work and really tap into the wonderful resources that are out there, and, you know, not just me, but so many other great resources, people have a tough time changing. And I got it. And I still continue to stay in there and work. Because, you know, when you do get married, you want to take it to the very, very end.
And here's a question then, really, about sort of Kitchen Divided. Now, you call, I think, obviously, just personally, that book kind of a fail. But if you had not been, and you are, so this is obviously a little bit on the hypothetical slash ridiculous side, but if you hadn't been as increasingly author of vegan cookbooks and a speaker and a coach for that kind of lifestyle, could with some other maneuvers now, again, looking back, could that kitchen and household divided have worked? Or is it your view, because of where you ended up on the spectrum, which was on the far end, was that just not going to destined to succeed regardless, unless he was going to budge a lot more?
I think the latter is really true for me personally. And the main reason is because here I am traveling on book tour constantly and on the lecture circuit, and I'm meeting all these amazing people and amazing communities that I had not tapped into in my own backyard. And part of it was because I felt afraid to really make that leap, and for good reasons that I won't go into. And I knew that if I did make the leap, that would end the marriage. And that is exactly what happened. Is I said, you know what, it's more important for me to go march in the gay pride parade with the Florida Voices for Animals, and I'm going to do that. And, you know, that increasingly became the flashpoint. Hey, you know, you were in this for health reasons, and now it's all about animal rights. But really, it was always about animal rights. Before I was ever married, in any of my marriages, I was out at the Ringling Circus protesting with my babes in arms and doing all that kind of stuff. So that's always who I've been. It just necessarily, it was not most predominant part of my life at the time as my book writing took off.
Right. So in a way, as I just sort of suggested, so you're not only sort of high profile, you've written these books, you speak all the time, you travel around, you coach people in a lifestyle. And then, not unrelated to that, but the reasons that you are vegan are changing or evolving, some might say. So was that just more than aggressively, in a way, on a collision course with the way your husband viewed things? And it sounds like that you just said, hey, well, I'm going to keep doing this. And so then there wasn't much room for negotiation, or even if he were more willing to entertain those kinds of compromises.
I think I learned within the last few years, and more recently, that at some point, some people reach a point at which they say, I am not going to do this, even if my life is in danger, even if I know that it will reverse whatever condition I've got. And there was a guy named Mark Sutton who wrote he's written a book on vegan pizzas, and he wrote this incredible blog about his father that was called Watching Suicide in Slow Motion. And I think a lot of people who are in these kinds of situations feel that way, that you are really witnessing as a person experiences these to some extent preventable diseases, what is going on. So, you know, you have to make that decision, I think, personally. How far are you willing to take this? And is it really until death do us part? Or if you observe somebody who is refusing to help themselves?
Because it sounds like a couple of things. One is that there was growing frustration, if not anger, both directions, which reached a certain point. And then, perhaps not unrelated, it sounds like a really pivotal situation was the heart attack.
Right. And I really want to make it clear that it was the lack of mutual respect. And that is more than anything what people, I think, have to have as they build these relationships and deciding, well, do I want a partner who is vegan or not? If a person can really, really respect you, then knock yourself out. And as I travel around the country, I know there are just tons of relationships like that. I will say, I think my observation is most of them are younger, so that they can talk about these things a little more openly and have the ability to change and grow as, in particular, it seems like men who are not vegan as much as women can see some of these movies and videos and atrocities and then go, oh my gosh, I can't stick my head in the sand anymore and pretend I don't see.
And I think you mentioned a moment ago that in the more immediate wake of the heart attack, he was open to making some changes, or did start to make some changes. So then did that just not continue, or did that sort of backpedal, or what?
The answer is yes. I mean, he just decided at some point he wasn't going to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And from what I've read and heard, that, again, the powerful addictiveness of some foods like sugar, salt, and fat keep pulling and tugging at the hearts and the brains. I mean, there are doctors running around the country, vegan and not, who show MRIs of the brain lighting up more from sugar than cocaine. And so anytime you process a food so much, it's in a fine powder, same thing applies to wheat, some are saying. You know, the flowers are creating the same kinds of issues. So again, if we're not eating how Mother Nature intended, how our ancestors really ate, we can often end up with these problems, as the research well documents.
So to what extent, when he did have the heart attack, did you sort of have the feeling of, given the sort of tussling that had gone on, surely now he'll go vegan?
You know, when you sign that contract that says until death do us part, it doesn't say you got to follow my road or the high road.
So right. I think is a pivotal part of this conversation today. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was really trying to hang in there as long as I could. But it was not that he wasn't vegan. It was the lack of respect. And I just keep coming back to that, because everybody has to answer that question. When you sign the dotted line, if a person that you are living with is not vegan, you know, how much is that going to impact you, and what kinds of things are you going to have to say to yourself, as I did? Oh, it's okay. I'm just going to pretend that I'm not seeing that fish on the plate, or that the meat, or the people in the restaurants who are coming in on wheelchairs with oxygen masks. You know,
yeah.
I just want to go to a vegan restaurant. That was kind of what I was getting to at the end of things.
And interestingly, to what extent do you think, from his standpoint, that he would say there was a lack of respect on your end towards his wanting to continue, for better or worse, his own lifestyle and way of eating?
You know, I have always offered, I had always offered to cook the food, and I did that. I even had cooking classes in my home where people drove as far as 2 hours away to watch me cook and taste my food and recipes and all that from my book. So, you know, certainly I was always there trying to offer myself as a resource. And as I always like to say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make a drink. And I think, as most people would when they're married, you give it your all. And was I inflexible? I think Duncan, the answer to that, and people who know me would say, absolutely not. You know, I went to all the restaurants he wanted to. I was in the hospital, again, as it was posted on Facebook when this first happened, fine, no questions. You know, I was posting daily there the hospital food and trying to make, you know, an educational experience both for my followers as well as just keeping people informed as to what was going on. And there was never an issue with that.
Yeah, I guess I'm just wondering, nonetheless, as flexible as you were, from his standpoint, even though it's a little complicated, but was there a thing where he might have said, can't you just back off and let me eat the way I eat? May not be what you do and even what you think is right from a health or other standpoint, but can't you just let me be and respect, since part of your issue was the disrespect to you, in your view, was there a sense that from him that you were sort of disrespecting his choice, even if you thought, okay, we're on a collision course medically, probably given your own knowledge and expertise, is there a chance that to him was like, just leave me alone on this, let it, you know, back off a little?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And by the way, we are treading more lightly than it might seem, because there are concerns from people that we're talking about, and being careful to try to be respectful about and not identify. So we're sometimes, if you're hearing a longer pause, that's probably as we run through some things. But so this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with vegan author, speaker, Ellen Jaffe Jones, and we're sort of deconstructing the unraveling of her marriage, chiefly tied to growing philosophical differences around her husband being a meat eater and Jones being a vegan, and those differences widening as she shifted from being vegan for health reasons to animal rights reasons. She will, by the way, be speaking at Creative Loafing's Veg Out event this Saturday, giving two different talks. So I invite you to join the conversation right now by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So we have had some calls and emails. Let's get some of those involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ellen Jaffe Jones.
Yeah, hi. Thanks to the author for her courage. I have two topics I'd like her to...
Okay, we might just do one, because we got a lot of calls and we're running short on time. So maybe just pick one and let's go with that.
Well, here's what I'll say to is that I believe that the issue that we as vegans have with society is that our stance is a moral stance in a post-moral society. We're not eating vegan just because it's the healthiest way to eat. We're eating vegan because we know that if we don't eat vegan, and I'm including dairy, that we are customers of people that treat other sentient animals in ways that we would not allow any other animal to treat us. And so when this lady, the author, is dealing with her husband about his dietary choices, she's dealing with a man who is making immoral choices, cruel choices, and not respecting the fact that she's taking the moral high ground. That's the crux of the debate when you have non-vegans. And I don't like the fact that it's being blurred here. I'd like to hear a comment on this.
You raise an excellent point.
Thank you for
prompting me to say, yes, eating vegan is not a diet, as some of my staunchest animal rights friends say. It is a lifestyle. It is a choice to not exploit animals. And for so many people who go vegan for health reasons or environmental reasons, all of a sudden they start connecting all these dots and the lights go off and it's like, you know, you can't witness this anymore. You can't be a part of it. And that definitely was the growing turmoil and conflict within me. So I do take responsibility. Call me intolerant. Call me inflexible. I couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't.
And again, you get married. Marriages change. Marriages face challenges. And not unrelated to some of those first two points, sometimes they don't work. And partly because there are different philosophies that weren't present maybe when you were saying I do, that develop and become very important and pronounced in such a way that, as we're hearing here, you can't really proceed.
Right. And many people do make the change together. And I've certainly seen that around the country. I wish it could have happened for me. I do wish it could have happened, but it didn't.
Sure. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Ellen Jaffe Jones.
Hey, good morning. Charlie the Plumber from Odessa, Florida.
Okay.
Hey, I'm a member of PETA. Plumbers eating tasty animals. But hey, you know what? As long as they're humanely butchered, I don't have an issue with it. But anything that's not humanely killed or butchered, yeah, that's not very nice either. I just wish that a lot of people would have the same passion as being a vegan is stopping abortion and the murder of unborn babies in the womb. I think that would be brilliant.
Okay, well, I appreciate your call. I think we're sort of wandering pretty far from the range here.
I just want to say that there is no humane meat to a vegan. A dead animal is still a dead animal. And PETA, actually, if you are a big fan of PETA, they have a fabulous undercover video they just released in the last couple of weeks that shows they went to an undercover video of Whole Foods and a supposedly humane farm, and it was no different than a conventional farm.
We can maybe get to some other calls or emails in a moment, but and again, this may not be something you can or want to answer, but at what point, given the things we have established, especially in the wake of the heart attack, and I guess there was a bypass as well, which I think people know much about that, know that there's often depression or other effects that come when someone has had a heart attack and or in the wake of that, a bypass. So at what point did you decide, okay, for me, I'm just not able to continue?
Well, because we do have some issues with regard to how much I can talk about this. You're right, Duncan. I'm not going to go there specifically.
Okay.
But what I would encourage your listeners to do is tap into a number of the vegan doctors out there who have specifically written about heart attacks and effects of being on the heart bypass machine, where basically you are deprived of oxygen for a short period of time. Now, I'm not saying that happened in this case, of course, but I just want people to be as fully educated, because if you agree to marry a meat eater, I want you to know that you may be forced with some of these decisions, some of these issues, and you think about it at the time, oh, well, that person's a runner, they're healthy, they're not going to get a heart attack, they're not going to have these issues, but and eating vegan is no guarantee that you're going to be perfectly healthy for 120 years. However, there is a great deal of research that shows that specifically for heart disease, it can be reversed, and prevented. So if it isn't, then you have to be prepared with the consequences and how you deal with that. You know, are you going to want to administer medicine to your significant other? Are you going to want to stay a month in the hospital at their bedside when the hospital asks you to do that? Are you going to deal with some of the common side effects of heart bypass surgery, which is, as you said, depression and many other things leading from that. So one of the things you can research is Dr. John McDougall on heart disease. And again, he's dealt with a lot of patients, Caldwell Esselstyn, another doctor. And so if you Google heart disease or heart bypass surgery and depression or violence or anything like that, you're going to pull up a slew of resources and research that will, you know, prepare you for what might or might not come.
Let's get another email or two involved here. So one says, wow, Ellen is such a great example for good health and compassion for animals, even though it ended a relationship. That's why I'm no longer in a relationship. Two, be true to thyself. So interesting note.
Amen,
there.
Amen, sister or brother.
Right. So at this point, what lessons can be imparted from your experience, meaning broader lessons than obviously just your own marriage? Because one of the reasons I did want to have this conversation is I thought this does and did have broader implications for relationships that people, again, go into and may or may not know those kinds of differences, but have to navigate the changes. And there's just maybe some observations that you have based on your own that do apply more broadly to people listening.
Well, as we all know, love is blind. And sometimes when you go into a relationship, you think, that's not going to happen. Or if it does, I can deal with it. And I think you just have to do the research and really prepare yourself that if it goes south or if something, some life-altering event happens, how are you going to deal with it? And you need to, I think, as in any relationship, talk it out thoroughly. And all I can say to you, Duncan, is that it's kind of like religion. If there are two vegan partners in a relationship or a marriage, it's going to be so much easier. And of course, 2020 vision, hindsight is so much clearer now. And for me, it would have meant, and I've reached this point now where I can say to myself, I would rather spend the rest of my life alone than being alone in a relationship. And that ultimately is what you have to decide.
And interestingly, one of my little scribble notes right before I came on here says hindsight, 2020 vision. So again, hindsight does provide 2020 vision, but I guess more specifically looking back, where for you are the pivotal points where you would do things differently? And what are those things?
Great question. There were so many times where I thought, I just can't do this anymore. I can't go to Red Lobster one more time. I can't go to the Outback Steakhouse. I can't do this. And especially when it's not being reciprocated. You know, that's what I would say to your listeners is if there is not this at least equal give and take, however you define it in your mixed marriage, then maybe you need to ask those serious questions about how can I go on? Can I go on? And what are the consequences as if I do bail? I think as we age in particular, you know, we kind of get stuck in our ruts and it's just easier to put up with things. I mean, I know so many couples who do that. And, you know, there's nobody who's perfect. I get that. And we all make compromises. But as you change in a relationship, as you alluded to before, you have to decide, how important is this? And for so many people, and I just can't reemphasize what that first caller said, once you go vegan, all of a sudden dots start connecting and the fireworks go off in your head. And it's like, OMG, I did not know this before. And if my partner is not coming along on the journey, especially after going to some of the incredible movies that are out there now, like Cowspiracy, The First Heart Attack on CNN, Forks Over Knives, all of those movies, they're just so like, how can you not be moved to change after seeing one or two or three or 10 of those movies?
Yeah, in some ways, almost even more directly, given what we're talking about, Veggiecated would be a particular example, just given how some of those folks started and their journey it covered in that film. But okay, so we're just in the last moment or two of our conversation. Let's get to another emailer. One says, what recommendation can you provide for people with asthma and why?
For a diet, I assume they're meaning.
I assume this is in the wake of those who are vegan, or those maybe who aren't now, but I guess would be well served by this if
right. Yeah, you know, I like to say a vegan diet cures a lot of things except for flat feet. And as a runner, you know, I've been working on that issue. But upper respiratory issues, and you know, maybe this caller was inspired by my referencing my father, who got rid of his upper respiratory issues. I had undiagnosed asthma as a child, and as I became vegan, it was like turning off a running faucet in the back of my throat. And many people have this reaction to dairy because, you know, we are the only species that drinks milk from another species. And even if you don't test lactose intolerant, the condition of your sinuses, which may or may not show up on any test, can be something that's easily reversed by getting rid of dairy.
Cool. There's also a note in that same emailer has a question about losing weight and how that works, but I think that's pretty established that going vegan pretty much sends you on that path. So let's see, another comment here. Hello, I live in a kitchen divided. I also own the book. I found it very helpful, and it helped unify the eaters in my house. I feel that compromise and mutual acceptance are key to harmonious dinners. This is a great topic. So thank you.
Thank you,
Ellen, for that. So, Ellen, you know, we have just maybe a minute or so. Is there anything just by way of sort of summing or wrapping up that you would like to say before we say our goodbyes here?
Well, I think that last email really nailed it in terms of many relationships can work as long as you talk it out beforehand and really figure out how to structure your kitchen and your lives so that you don't feel like you're killing each other. But that said, you know, once you've made the plunge, I wouldn't do it any other way. I mean, I would just never even consider, if I am crazy enough to ever look at a man again, if they're not vegan, it's not happening.
Yeah. And let's just get one more practical tip. Here's an email that says, although I'm not vegan, I'm looking for an option to replace half and half in my morning coffee. Currently trying So Delicious coconut creamer, but it's not doing the trick. Note, I do not like sweet coffee.
Yeah. There are so many alternative plant-based milks out there. They even make hemp milk. You know, don't smoke it, but just try them all, because whatever you spend on trying a sample, you buy a carton for your fridge, you know, it's way cheaper than a heart attack. It's way cheaper than any of the diseases you might get from consuming dairy products.
And one or two in particular that you might want to send this listener.
Well, if she
on the
doesn't
way to
like
try
the sweetness, a lot of these milks are sweetened, so just look for the unsweetened varieties.
Version of like almond milk, soy.
Soy,
et cetera,
exactly,
right? Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And don't get vanilla, because vanilla is often sweetened.
Yeah. Okay, well, again, we've been speaking with Ellen Jaffe Jones, who will be giving two different lectures this Saturday at the new Creative Loafing event, Veg Out, and that'll be held at the Creative Loafing Space in Courtyard. You can go to Creative Loafing, I think, /veg out for more details about time and topics and location. So Ellen, again, and by the way, her website is vegcoach.com. So Ellen, thank you so much for coming in and joining us and talking about the complicated and obviously difficult subject, but I think hopefully some very illuminating things that we hit on along the way, and a cautionary tale or two as well.
So, thank you so much for having me, Duncan.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
In a few moments, I'll chat briefly with Twyla Cole of the Humane Society of Pinellas about their Pet Festival 2016, happening on January 30th in St. Petersburg. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with Maria Bamford and two slices of a set she did Friday on Stephen Colbert, who called her his favorite comedian on planet Earth. This is Maria Bamford with excerpts of I'm Calling Raccoon, Horseback Riding, in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
My beloved husband has noticed that I like to tear open packages of food, take caps off beverages, and leave it out and around. And he said very kindly, very sweetly, why? And I said, because I'm a raccoon. I need to get in there, get what's good, be on my way. Oh, but what if it goes bad? What if you get sick? Were you not listening when I just mentioned that I'm a raccoon? I can digest ceiling tile. I just need to fill this up. Get back to the river with my friends.
Did you just bring an old salad to bed?
It's nighttime. I'm awake. This year, my friend Amy is always trying to get me to do stuff. I'm going to try to say yes.
You want to go horseback riding?
What is it?
You go on a dusty trail with two lesbians who used to be a couple, but now they run a small business together, and horses bite.
Okay, I'll go once, and I'll need a Dairy Queen peanut butter parfait on the way back. That's hot fudge peanuts ice cream. Hot fudge peanuts ice cream. Hot fudge peanuts ice cream. Cherry topper.
You want to go swing dancing? Are people still doing that? The war is over. There's plenty of pantyhose for everyone. It's on Sundays from 2 to 4, just when you don't want to do anything, and it's side, side, back step, side, side.
I'll go for 3 years, but that is it!
You want to go to a fitness boot camp? It's every day at 6 a.m., because they're getting you into a shape. And you run, and you run, and you run, and there's no game element to distract you from the fact that you're running, and running, and running.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go for 5 days. Day 5, Tanya, and I know it's going to be Tanya, is going to say, "Come on, Maria, I want to see you push it." And I am never going to go again.
But will you forget to cancel the automatic debit coming from your checking account and pay for it for the next year and a half?
Of course I will. I love you so much. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
That was Maria Bamford with a piece I'm calling Raccoons Horseback Riding, taken from her appearance Friday night on Stephen Colbert. Let's move now into the conversation with Twyla Cole of the Humane Society of Pinellas about this weekend's Pet Festival. January 30th, Pet Festival 2016. Indeed, let's welcome Twyla Cole back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Twyla.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Sure. So give us the lowdown on Pet Festival 2016. How many pet festivals have there been before the 2016 edition?
This will be the second type in this format at this location.
Okay. Sounds very specific.
So we've done,
okay.
You know, the big community events for a good 20 years with different types of themes and things like that.
So give us some details. Where does this happen? When? Et cetera.
Next Saturday, January 30th. From 9 until 1, we're going to be out at Carillon Park. So the exact address is 300 Carillon Parkway, literally the center of Tampa Bay. So when everybody comes out, there's going to be a ton of vendors out there with different things to shop, both people and pet-related items. We're going to have quite a few of our fellow rescue friends all out there with adoptable pets as well. The Doggy Fun Zone is going to be set up in the middle, so people will have the opportunity for their pets to participate in a really cool interactive lure course where the animals are literally leaping through the air and going through tunnels. It's really awesome. And then at 11 will be the big pet pirate costume contest. And we're going to have our celebrity judges, Miss Melanie Michaels and Phoebe from Hot 115 joining us.
Wow. Well, that sounds like it's jam-packed.
It's going to be a great day. Yep. Our mobile unit will be out there as well with vaccines and microchips. Also,
again, if people come out, they don't have their obviously all pets or at least ones on leashes are welcome to come to the pet festival. I guess it wouldn't really be much of a pet festival without pets. But but it sounds like if they are not vaccinated or chipped, this would be a great opportunity to get that remedied.
Yep, absolutely. Our mobile unit goes out and provides services. So it's just one of those spots that it will be so people can come from all around and get that service or get that taken care of if they're in need.
And the other thing, too, though, given that it's Pet Fest 2016, is that you can come there without a pet, but you can leave there very conceivably with a pet.
You better believe it. It can all happen there at the Pet Fest 2016.
So how many different groups are going to be there with animals that will be available for adoption?
As of right now, I have 50 different rescue groups that have signed up.
How many? Sorry, I missed that. How many?
Sorry. 15 rescue groups have also signed up.
Mm-hmm.
I know Pinellas Animal Services will be out there with their big mobile unit filled with pets. SPCA Tampa Bay will be out there with pets. And then again, we have so many different rescue partners in the central Tampa Bay area that will be all coming out with their animals to meet, greet, and hopefully make matches.
Wow, that sounds really great. So where, if somebody wanted to just find out a little bit more information, is there a dedicated Facebook page, or is there a part of the Humane Society Pinellas website where people could kind of confer on some of this, double check some details for the 30th?
Absolutely, both are available. a Humane Society of Pinellas.org/events/. The Pet Fest is the first thing you're going to see, so that will pop right up. And then we also have a Facebook page for Pet Fest 2016 in our Humane Society Facebook page. So both will have continued updated information.
Great. Well, sounds like we've covered all the bases, Twyla, and it sounds like it's going to be a heck of an afternoon and day over there at Millennium Parkway.
Yes, we've got a great day planned. We hope to see everybody out. We'd love to see you, and thank you so much for giving us the chance to talk about it.
All right, Twyla, thank you so much for joining us again on Talk Animals. Take care.
Thank you.
And while we're on the topic of Humane Societies in the area, wanted to mention that the Humane Society of Tampa Bay has launched Game of Homes. Yes, you heard me. Cat Adoption Initiative. They've gotten a grant from Best Friends Animal Society, reducing adoption fees for cats over 4 months old to, can't say on the air exactly how much, but I think you'd be shocked, they tell you, for how inexpensive you could adopt an otherwise homeless cat. So want to check that out, you can go to humanesocietytampa.org. I'm Duncan Strasser, listening to Talking Animals. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour, it constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. In fact, let's get into that. It is now time to proceed to Name That Animal. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. There will be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, as I say, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song that would have been the Name That Animal tune last week, but it got bumped for Mr. Bowie. So this is Name That Animal tune on Talking Animals.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friend.
A nod, of course, to our interview last week with Cy Montgomery about her fascinating book all about octopuses. So we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Lori is up next with what amounts again to 2 hours of Radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, January 27th, with another edition of Talking Animals. I hope, meanwhile, you'll go to talkinganimals.net and check out all the cool thank you gifts that we have lined up exclusively for people who support Talking Animals in the winter fun drive that's coming right around the corner. And again, some of those things, we can make cool deals if you donate early. Let's actually put one of our... Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're on the air. Can you name that animal tune?
Octopus's Garden.
Of course. What is your name?
Lynn.
Okay, yes. Lynn, I'm going to come back and get your information and send you off a Talking Animals t-shirt.
Thank you. T-shirt.
All right, we do have a winner, obviously, folks. So, anyways, our website is talkinganimals.net. Again, we have all the information on thank you gifts for the fun drive there and other information, archives for past shows, links to the Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. So please check that out. I'm Duncan Shaw. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show not with an animal song exactly as we typically do, but rather a song that kind of connects with our conversation with Ellen Jaffe Jones by Consolidated, called The Sexual Politics of Meat on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals.
representation of patriarchal values. Meat eating is the reinscription of male power at every meal. The patriarchal gaze sees not the fragmented flesh of dead animals, but appetizing food. Vegetarian activities counter patriarchal consumption and challenge the consumption of death. Feminist vegetarian activity declares that an alternative worldview exists, one which celebrates life rather than consuming death, one which does not rely on resurrected animals, but empowered people. The disempowering of women. It takes the notion of objectification one step further. Not only have we objectified animals, but in objectifying them, we take what we want from them and leave the rest out. We leave their death out and we take their bodies. We leave the images of their death out, but take the meaning of meat and apply it to women.